Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say my name, no one is around you. Say, baby, I love you. You ain't running game. Say my
well,
name.
Well, you hear that?
You acting kinda shady.
And you kinda know what that is all about. It's Destiny's Child, and of course, that is who we talk to every Tuesday. Andrew Dixon, affectionately known as Destiny's Child by Joe. That's who we go to every Tuesday to talk about the Pirates, of course. He covers the Pirates for the Post-Gazette. Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan text line is 412-928-9370. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Andrew, you are, I think, here, right? You're not in Milwaukee, because yesterday we had Noah on, and he said he was headed to Milwaukee.
Yeah, you heard correctly, Paul. Yeah, I'm here in Pittsburgh, and unfortunately, I'm not able to join you guys on the screen because I'm getting my car serviced right now. So I'm just meandering the parking lot here in the North Hills at Jim Shorkey Toyota, getting my car looked at. But yeah, Noah's on the road trip, and I'm here resting up for a few days until I head out to Dallas for the All-Star game.
Well, it's too bad that you're not in Monroeville here, because this is what we're not even on camera anyway, because we're also at a car dealership at Studio B at Bowser Chevrolet. So if you were getting your car serviced here, you could have just walked in and joined us.
Man, that would have been a dream, Paul. I should have set that up. I can't believe I messed up on this one. I'll take the blame there.
That's all on you, buddy. You got to get it right here. So, I guess we'll start with John Perotto's story today that basically said the front office is upset because, Bob Nutting said publicly, hey, you know, we've got to go for it, or we've got to, try and add some hitting. We're gonna spend some money. But then the flip side of it is, I guess behind the scenes, he said there will be no money to add players. That actually is sort of more along the lines of what you have been talking about for two or three weeks, while everybody else is talking about go out and going out and getting all these players. You've sort of been talking about the fact that it's probably not necessarily going to happen.
Right. And that's kind of exactly it, right? That's my stance. And I don't have people saying as much to me on record as, John Perotto does in this instance. Credit to him for that one. But in this instance, yeah, I look at it as this team with where it's at, what it's demonstrated. I'll even look at this particular homestand, which, albeit they finished on a strong note by splitting against the Mets. But this was a homestand that, if you're the Pirates, you really would have liked to gone 4-3 or gone 5-2. But, to drop the first series, especially against a division rival, to lose two of the first three against the Mets, especially after you have that Friday night game where they, they hit the crap out of the ball, for lack of better phrasing, and then, the offense kind of goes stagnant for the next 2 days. That just leads me to the point of this team has not demonstrated enough that it's one that needs to be seriously considered as a contender or to be seriously bought into. The way I look at it is the comments maybe not particularly surprising on my end, but I don't think that any of us should be surprised, because this is not a team that's in first place. This is not a team that has had a wild card spot locked up by any means. They haven't been above 500, I believe, since the end of April, something like that. So, I just look at it as I'm not terribly surprised by the comments, I guess.
Right. I mean, you and I have talked about it as well. One of the ways they could do things like that.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is they could one of the ways they could do things like adding a couple of players is, you know, maybe subtracting some salary in the forms of Chapman and Perez, who are two guys that they probably could survive without, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And then you look at moving both of those guys, what that would do in terms of payroll, that's where you could then maybe have the flexibility to go out and get a greater impact guy. You know, I don't think there's a particular exact number of, okay, this is the figure that Ben Cherington and the front office are allowed to work with. But I think it's also, you know, we're not going to exceed that by some exorbitant amount for the sake of a team that's below 500. What that does mean is, hey, if you're going to sell off guys, that shouldn't come at the expense of, you know, the season is lost. We're not trading for anybody. I think you can reallocate assets and say, hey, this $10 million that was given to Aroldis Chapman or this $8 million that was given to Martin Perez, if you're able to offload those guys and get prospects in return, maybe you can take on a little bit bigger of a salary via another player from another organization, whether that's a huge name, a sizable name, you know, maybe more of a prospecting type of guy. I think everything's on the table. But to your point, Paul, I think moving both of those guys, which is something that we've suggested on here, that makes all those kinds of moves easier and more feasible, given the likely, I guess you could call it, limitations on payroll with the Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that we were talking about. Of course, yesterday, City Limits and I were talking about the fact that if you look at Mitch Keller's contract, there's almost no chance they're going to pay the last 2 years of that at $18 million and $20 million. I would say there's zero chance. I'm not even sure they'd pay the third year at $16 million, or, you know, 2 years from now at $16 million. So, you know, if you feel really good about your pitchers coming up, I mean, if you really want to look at a tradable asset that's going to free up money, that's going to bring back a really good return, I mean, he might be the most logical one you have. I'm not saying you have to trade him, but I also don't think it's the worst idea in the world.
Sure, and I think exactly that is that contract, while maybe high for the Pirates, I don't think for another team that it would be such a burden to take on. You know, let's play hypotheticals here. You know, I'm not hearing anything on this front by any means, but let's say Mitch Keller were dealt to a team like the Yankees or the Dodgers 2-3 years down the line. Like, they'd be willing to take on that contract in full. They'd be willing to give up prospects, potentially hitting prospects, which we know the Pirates kind of have a dearth of right now, not a huge quantity of. You could flip Keller pretty easily in that regard, but what would you retain by not making a big splash move right now? You'd still have Bubba Chandler in your farm system, who I believe to be the lone untouchable prospect for the Pirates. He's a guy who should not be traded. He's a guy who has a ceiling of an ace of a rotation, a floor of, in my opinion, at worst, you know, he's a closer. He's probably a number two or number three starter. Even in this rotation, he could be the number three behind Skeens and Jones. Like, that's something that Pirates fans should be legitimately excited about. I would say that that's a great starting place. Braxton Ashcraft, if he stays healthy, can be a back end of the rotation guy. Johan Oviedo coming back from Tommy John surgery next year. Maybe Quinn Priester still develops. Luis Ortiz has had a really good year. You have so many other options that it's great to have those options, but it doesn't mean you can't part ways with one of them, especially dependent on what you see from the young guys once they come up here next year, 2 years, et cetera.
Right, exactly. I think that's the most important thing to remember is that you got a lot of young guys in your arsenal. You can save money, and maybe that money that you save, you know, you're able to pay to go get, you know, other players to fill in some of the holes you have in your roster.
Right, 100%. I think that's the deal, too, is that let's not forget, now that Paul Skeens and Jared Jones are both here, like, this Pirates team is exciting. They are one that's, you know, maybe kind of like the Cincinnati Reds, where it's, hey, you got some really young, exciting talent. Who's to say that this isn't a more desirable free agent destination next year? Now, you know, the Pirates are never going to be the ultimate destination for all 30, you know, among all 30 teams, just given some of those limitations financially. But strictly speaking, as hey, this is a team that has some young, exciting talent. Like, I imagine that's a more desirable place for free agents next year, because it's not the hypotheticals of, oh, when Paul Skeens gets here, when Jared Jones gets here, and who knows what you see. Like, next year can be, hey, this is the core. This is the headlining of the rotation. These are the top three, four guys. You know, that's something that you can legitimately say to a free agent, hey, this is the plan. You are the missing link. I don't know that it's been quite as easy in years past to convince guys of that, because it's kind of a, you know, show me, what have you done lately? I think the Pirates, yes, this season isn't a true success, but at the very least, they've demonstrated, hey, we are very, very close to contending, if not contending this year.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, again, they have some holes in their roster that they've got to fill, and there's a lot of ways they can do it. But I think one of the things that is becoming increasingly clear that I don't know that they can go get enough help at the deadline to push them over the top to go and become a playoff team.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I don't think that help is available there. I think the reality is that, okay, let's play hypotheticals here. If you were to go out and get a true impact guy like a Jazz Chisholm or a Luis Robert, or, you know, you go on the rotation side, whether that's a Garrett Crochet, or you could go, you know, more of a one-year rental guy like a Tommy Pham. Like, these are some names that have been thrown out there as being available. Like, all of them, aside from Pham, would probably cost a lot by way of prospects, and not one of those guys is enough on their own, in my opinion at least, to elevate this team into a playoff standing. Or at the very least, you know, maybe they could get to the dance, they could get there, but it's not a team that's a World Series contender. And I know some people might push back on that and say, well, oh, look at the Arizona Diamondbacks last year. They got in and they made it work. I don't know that this Pirates team is quite that. I don't think they have the lineup quite to the degree that the Diamondbacks had last year with guys like Christian Walker and Corbin Carroll and Ketel Marte. Like, I think that Diamondbacks team played in a much tougher division and was built for that type of run. I understand this Pirates pitching staff is too, and to some degree, with the three-man at the top, but I don't think there's one true impact guy out there available who's enough to push them over the top. It would probably take two of those kinds of guys, and then that really depletes the farm system.
Well, I would say absolutely. You have to go out and get a couple of those guys if you really want to put yourself in position to make a run, and it sounds like they're not going to be willing to do that, which brings us all the way full circle to the start of this. I mean, it sounds like they're going to have to probably be sellers at the deadline, and I know people hate to hear that, but there's no reason in the world if they're not going to contend this year. Nobody can make an argument for me why they would keep any of their rental guys around. Why not, you know, move them, try and get a little bit in return, and you know, stash the money to try and, you know, make, you know, go make a run at some players next year.
Yeah, the only guy I think of the rentals, and I think Martin Perez, I would certainly move him. Aroldis Chapman, I would certainly move him. Marco Gonzalez, when he comes back healthy, if he does before the trade deadline, like, that would be a great guy that you could flip. That might be a little bit of a harder task, just given his return timeline from injury. But the one guy that I would maybe give pause about trading would be Rowdy Tellez. And I know, you know, I mean, he's kind of endeared himself to the fan base the last month. You go to PNC Park and people are chanting his name. And I know that, you know, he wants to be here. You know, like, this is a guy who has traveled a little bit the last couple of years, you know, from the Blue Jays to the Brewers and now to Pittsburgh. I get it. It was a one-year kind of prove-it deal. And there's still very much time remaining here. But if you could ink him to a similar contract, like, that's not ruining your payroll by any means. I mean, he was here on a one-year, $3.2 million deal. I imagine you could bring him back for a similar contract, maybe a little bit more if he keeps hitting like this. But he would be the one guy that I would maybe hesitate to flip, just because, as we've talked about on here and Pirates fans know, finding a solution at first base has been so difficult. And I don't think he's necessarily a long-term solution. But what he's provided recently, it's league-average defense, and the bat has been above average the last month and change. So depending how these next few weeks go, if he's the team that he's a guy that other teams are interested in, maybe I wouldn't flip him. Maybe I would retain Tellez.
Well, that would be that would obviously be somebody that would be it would probably, as amazing as it seems, would be unpopular. Whereas a month ago, everyone was talking about DFA and the guy. I'm not sure I can remember a guy who turned it around so quickly.
Yeah, it's truly
incredible. That guy has. What he's done has been impressive.
Yeah, it's truly incredible. And I mean, it's credit to him, right? This is a guy who stuck with it at the end of May, went up to Toronto and was really scuffling. Connor Joe had kind of taken away the everyday role there at first base. But to Telez's credit, I mean, he kept showing up. He kept pushing through it. And we've seen that hard work, the swing changes. You know, he's gone back to that leg kick with his load. Like, it's all working for him. His timing is certainly down, and he's in a much better place to hit. And that's come in conjunction with some solid defense. You know, I don't think Rowdy Telez is ever going to win a gold glove over there at first base, but you look at the advanced metrics and you look at the eye test, like, he's done everything they could have asked for a guy at first base, you know, given what they paid him. It took a while to get there, but he's basically done what they paid him to do, right? This isn't a guy who was being paid $20 million to play first base. The reality is he was brought here on a one-year kind of prove-it deal, and I think Telez has certainly held up his end of the bargain, especially as of late.
Yeah, there's no question about it. One guy I just can't quite figure out why he continues to get a bat put in his hand and be allowed to go up and hit is Michael A. Taylor. And I know all about his glove, and everybody talks about his glove and his defense and his metrics, but what exactly is the reason why we have to watch this guy bat?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons there, but the one that I'll highlight is that he is on a one-year deal, right? And as much as he has been a good defender, the goal here is that if he can put together a couple strong weeks, the way that Telez did, if he can put together a couple of strong weeks, there are a number of teams that would like to have Michael A. Taylor. The deal here is that, this is pure speculation on my part, but the deal there is that if Taylor really scuffles and continues to the rest of the way, well, at some point, maybe hypothetically, the Pirates would designate him for assignment, then another team would scoop him up for free, right? And the Pirates are not in the business of doing that. What they would like to do, I imagine, if he's not part of the long-term plan, or at least past this year, is that if you keep running him out there, keep getting him at bats, maybe it finally turns for a better direction, and he's a guy that you can more easily trade and flip him, if only for, you know, bonus money, you know, or, you know, stuff, something like that, a low-level prospect. Like, that's better than nothing, considering you got this guy for $4 million, and you'd prefer that not to go entirely to waste.
Andrew Destin's brought to you on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh Trusting Plumbing provider for over 50 years, also 93.7 The Fan. And the Pirates want to visit your teams in action for our youth baseball and softball showcase. Parents and coaches, send an email to us, usports@937thefan.com, to register your 12 and under team at 93.7 The Fan. May make a stop to your field at 937thefan.com. Century 21 Fairways Real Estate. Andrew, if you look at this, what is there, 7 games now between now and the All-Star game? 6?
6.
6. Is it fair to say if the Pirates go 3-3 or worse, that then it becomes really very, very clear to everybody involved that it's time to consider offloading guys at the deadline, and that the pipe dream of the playoffs is probably done?
I think so. You know, I think that would be a fair point to make. I think this homestand, you know, not to draw it back to what just happened behind us, but I would say that, you know, it would be very difficult conversations if the Pirates were to have gone 5-2 during this stretch against the Cardinals and Mets, and then, you know, maybe you only take 1 out of 3 against the Brewers, but what if you sweep the White Sox and then you look at it and go, oh, wow, 9-4 in their last 13. Then we're probably having some very different conversations. But the reality is, I think this team, they've made it pretty clear what they are. They've got some good top-end talent, especially on the pitching side. Brian Reynolds has had a heck of a season. Some other guys have played some really good defense. Some other guys have provided solid bets. It's been streaky. But the fact of the matter is that they haven't been a team that's gone on a run, that's made it, you know, indisputable. This is the direction the team should go, whether that's for better or for worse. You know, they haven't had an extended losing streak in a while. They haven't had an extended winning streak in a while. So, you know, maybe if they were to go 5-1, during this road trip, sure, that sways the opinion. But I look at it as, yeah, if they go 3-3 or less, I just don't see how that's the direction that you go.
Yeah, I mean, I would say basically the fact is that they missed an opportunity. They had seven games at home against teams that are in front of them, and they failed to really, you know, make any movement. They were 3-4, and so I hate to sound the alarm, but it feels like this week is sort of the end if they don't make a move in terms of them actually going out and maybe making a couple of moves to get better.
Yeah, which is probably valid. I mean, I think that's totally fair. And you also look at it, you know, what takes place right after the All-Star break, right? It's not just these two road trips or these two road series, but also, hey, the next step after that is you host the Phillies, and then you host the Cardinals again, and then you go on the road and you play the Astros and the Diamondbacks. Like, none of those are gimmies by any means. So it's probably a little bit too quick to pull the trigger to say that, hey, if they go into the All-Star break dropping, you know, four of their last six on the road, you know, maybe that's enough to sound the alarms a little bit. But I think you also have to take into account, hey, the Phillies are coming into town. That's arguably been the best team in baseball from start to finish or start to this juncture so far this year. The Cardinals have been one of the hottest teams in baseball and just took two out of three from the Pirates. You know, the Astros have surged. The Diamondbacks have kind of scuffled and underperformed, but that's probably, you know, the most favorable of the matchups, but it's on the road. So I look at it as this is a hard month of June, and I think this team is going to play itself out and demonstrate to ownership and to the front office what the course of action is, whether that's for better or for worse. But I think this month in general, we should have a fairly clear picture of where this team stands by the end of it, if not going into the All-Star break.
Last one for you. Speaking of the All-Stars, I've been talking about this a lot. There seems to be sort of an underlying tone that Mitch Keller was quote-unquote snubbed for the All-Star game. It's amazing to me how all of these arguments become circular, because for the last 15 years, those people inside baseball, those people that are analytics people, those math guys, they've all told us that pitching wins is almost an irrelevant stat. When it comes to making the case for Mitch Keller outside of pitching wins, I'm not sure there's another case you can make when you look at where he ranks in ERA and strikeouts per nine and WAR and WHIP and all the other things that we're told is how you really should measure a pitcher. So I guess my question to you is, was it really a snub of Mitch Keller?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he pitched at a close to all-star caliber form. And it's also, you know, I had a good conversation with Joey Bart about this yesterday. He was saying how, you know, it's really hard to make an all-star game right now just given how good starting pitching is. So I think we have to recalibrate ourselves a little bit in the sense that, yeah, a couple of years ago, having a 3-4 ERA heading into the break, yeah, that's pretty darn good. You match that with a 10 wins, all of that, yeah, it'd be good enough. But the reality is there's so many good starting pitching guys this year. I mean, just off the top of my head, aside from Paul Skeens, you know, Chris Sale and Ranger Suarez have both been so elite all year, and those guys both have infinitely better numbers across the board than Mitch Keller. The point that I think about Keller that's interesting, which you can't really take into consideration for all-star voting or, you know, all-star placement, in my opinion, is just how valuable he's been to Paul Skeens and Jared Jones of showing them the ropes and helping them get acclimated to pitching in the big leagues. They've both credited Keller in numerous ways, so I think that can't be understated. But that's not part of the All-Star Game conversation. The way I kind of look at this is, did Mitch Keller get snubbed? I don't really know if that's my place to say. I don't think it was a clear and obvious choice. So in that case, you can't really have it too strong of an argument. But I think what inevitably plays out here is, he'll make it as a late replacement the way that David Bednar did last year, and then everybody's happy and the Pirates send three reps. And if not, well, Keller was really darn close.
Well, thank you so much, Andrew, as always, and enjoy a couple of days, I guess, off, and then you'll be there for the All-Star game to hopefully you're going to be there to write about Skeens either striking out Aaron Judge or Aaron Judge hitting one a mile off of Skeens. One or the other is what we're all rooting for.
Yeah, the last thing we want is a walk, right? That'd be the least, most anticlimactic way. So should be a blast. I'm certainly looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yep, always a pleasure. Thanks, Paul. Enjoy.
All right. That was Destiny's Child. HM3 Partners Independence Fund presents Celebrity Care Fest, benefiting UPMC Children's Hospital Foundation. Two nights of star-studded entertainment, July 26th and 27th, Pat Benatar, Neo Giraldo, Smokey Robinson, and a superstar artist so big we can't say it. Learn who at hm3.org. Tickets on sale at hm3.org. That's what we want to see at the All-Star game, right? Either Skeens striking out Aaron Judge or Aaron Judge hitting 1 mile off of Skeens. I mean, that's how we're conditioned to think. I remember when Jose Canseco was playing, and that was one of his all-time best lines. He's like, they asked him, why he's always swinging for the fence, and he said, people pay money to see me swing for the fence. Me swinging hard, swinging three times and missing is more exciting than George Brett hitting a single to left. It's true. I want to see Aaron Judge get up and try and take Skeens deep. I want to see Skeens come with 102-mile-an-hour fastballs three times in a row. See, okay, I'm going to see if I can blow it past you or you can hit it out of the park. That's what we want to see in the All-Star game for sure. Anyway, we've got to get to a break. It's 93.7 The Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.